quite heartened by the terrific attendance, especially after following a Saturday night in New Orleans. We will reward you by moving along as briskly as we can this morning. My name is Danny Boggs. I'm a judge on the United States Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals for the last 17 years. My task is to introduce and moderate the panel on the topic, Domestic Challenges to the Rule of Law. We will close sharp at 9:50 and will be followed by a panel on international prospects for the rule of law to be chaired by Carlos Ball. So as they say, don't go away. The second game of the doubleheader will be even better. When I was asked to moderate this, I put together a few thoughts on the rule of law, and I was struck or fearful of the idea that perhaps at least the broad outline and definitions would already have been taken care of and have been commonplace. As everybody can tell from yesterday's session, that did not turn out to be the case. We had some very lively discussions on the very definition and meaning in the broadest sense of the rule of law. And I wanted to just give you a couple of my thoughts and conceptions on that still open question of what the rule of law means. To me, it is pretty much the old Blackstonian concepts of predictability, of notice in advance, of decision without respect to persons. And whether we are confident of the exact definition, we know, looking around the world, that there is a vast and important difference between those countries that broadly can be said to have the rule of law and those that do not. This was borne in upon me when I had the honor on three occasions to lead delegations to the Soviet Union and then to Russia, attempting to teach Russian judges in the transition period, both before and after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And one of the things that struck me was that just before that time, you may remember there was, when Gorbachev had started to make some changes, and there was a lot of question about, was this all a sham or were things really changing? And the first meeting of the mildly freely elected Congress of People's Deputies, the newspapers, the English translations began to indicate people talking about the law-ruled state. And that phrase, you know, sort of struck me both positive and negative. We don't want a state ruled by lawyers, and we don't want a state where the law governs every aspect of society. And so I tried to find out, what did this English translation really mean? And it turned out it was a known in dissident circles or intellectual circles, a phrase, gosudarne pravovoye, the state that is under the law, which is what we mean by the rule of law, that the law was above the simple momentary will of the government, that it was something that people at least to some extent could rely on as a source of authority and guidance other than simply the all-powerful state or the all-powerful party. Now, the rule of law also has to encompass a reasonably independent judiciary. And also in Russia, the story that everyone would tell was what they called telephone justice, that the party boss would call up and tell the judges how to rule. Then we met a dissident lawyer who said, you know, they talk about this telephone justice, but really that's only for the stupid ones. The smart ones don't have to be told how they're supposed to rule in that society, which did strike me as that there's a brief ditty congruent to that of, one cannot hope to bribe nor twist, thank God, the British journalist, but seeing what unbribed he'll do, there really is no reason to. Well, of course, judges can lack independence for those reasons as well. But I would assert, though, that the rule of law is also different from simply good policy. There is a temptation in circles such as this to simply say that any bad policy is antithetical to the rule of law. And I think that's a fallacy. I may prefer a 20% tax rate to a 23% tax rate, but I don't think that threatens the rule of law. I may think that regulations on what kind of air conditioner I can buy, which I used to have to enforce in the Energy Department, are stupid, but they don't necessarily threaten the rule of law, and so on. But some policies may be unworkable or unenforceable in the absence of discretion so vast that it is incompatible with the rule of law, so that to choose those policies, such policies, is indeed to be against the rule of law. But the area within the rule of law can still be very large. Think about what we would think of as the heyday of the British common law, of that rule of law that we have hearkened to, say, 1700 to 1850. It was a period of vast expansion of franchise, but strongly entrenched aristocratic privileges, of corn laws and of no corn laws, of high tariffs and low tariffs, of slavery in the colonies and abolition of slavery in the colonies. And yet, collectively, together, we would agree that the rule of law prevailed in England at that time. Well, I'm going to close and then introduce our panel who will attack this question of the domestic challenges to the rule of law in three different interesting areas to see what policies are simply bad and perhaps what threaten the rule of law. And my concluding meditation is perhaps on a bit on the certainty of laws. We want laws to be certain. We hope that we could predict, in most cases, what judges will do and how they will enforce the law. But at the same time, if we could always predict, let us say, what the Supreme Court would do, that would probably be a sign that something other than independent judgment was at work. And I was interested, there is a project, you can find it on the web, where Washington University Law School has both legal experts and a computer model predict every case the Supreme Court is hearing this term. And I'll give you the preliminary results, and you can decide for yourself whether this is an encouraging or a discouraging result. For the 36 cases the Supreme Court has decided thus far, the humans and the machine have gotten even the result right only 70% of the time, and they have gotten only 6 of the 9 individual justices' votes correct on average. I say I will leave that to you, whether that is an encouraging sign of the independence of the judiciary or a discouraging sign of the inconstancy and our inability to predict them. Well, I will now turn to our panel. We have 3 excellent and widely ranging speakers. I'm going to introduce each of them at the beginning. They will then have each 12 minutes to speak to you. Bill Campbell has told me that in addition to my judicial powers, I have his powers to enforce these time limits ruthlessly so that we will have time for the extensive questioning and commenting that we saw yesterday. Professor Herman Belts is professor of history at the University of Maryland, College Park, and academic director of the James Madison Fellowship Foundation, which is a small government agency that makes grants to promote learning in American history. He has also been a fellow at the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions in Princeton, obviously deeply learned in the progenitor of our Bill of Rights. He has had a long and distinguished historical career, including winning the Albert J. Beveridge Award of the American Historical Association for his first historical book and being a grantee of the American Bar Foundation for Legal History. He tells me he will be basically addressing issues in academia, admissions discrimination, race that he has written on, and affirmative action. Professor, now Judge, Michael McConnell will be our second speaker. Michael began his distinguished career by being a Kentuckian, as am I. He went on from there to Michigan State University, the University of Chicago Law School. He clerked for Judge Skelly Wright and for Justice William Brennan of the United States Supreme Court, so he knows whereof he speaks with regard to judicial matters. He served in Washington under the reign of the good General Meese, in part as assistant to the Solicitor General at the Department of Justice. He then went on to a very distinguished teaching career at the University of Chicago and then at the University of Utah Law Schools. He was one of President Reagan's first, President Bush's first batch of nominees, and after suffering the slings and arrows for about a year and a half, maybe closer to 2 years, his clear and inestimable talents, as well as the results of the 2002 election, cause the opposition. I say both together because there are many others to whom the opposition did not dissolve, but Judge McConnell was sworn in earlier this year. As I say, I may have more trouble keeping him to time since he now has life tenure. Our third speaker is Professor John Baker of the Louisiana State University Law School. He has had an interesting and varied career in a wide variety of fields of criminal law, constitutional law, conflicts. He has taught at the universities of Lyon. He has co-taught courses with Justice Antonin Scalia. He has a law degree from Michigan, University of Michigan Law School, with or without affirmative action. He has a PhD in political thought from the University of London. I now give you Professor Belts.